Welcome to an enlightening podcast from IslamPodcasts.com. We encourage our listeners to please comment and let us know how we can grow in our knowledge to better serve our community. Please remind your family and friends to also visit IslamPodcasts.com for engaging discussions on current events, Islamic guidance, Quran, tafsir, seerah, and much more. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Podcasts on current events, Islamic guidance, Quran tafsir, and seerah are available at islampodcasts.com as well as on iTunes. Rate, review, and comment and let us know how we can grow in our knowledge to better serve our community. Please subscribe, share, and tell a friend about islampodcasts.com as well as rate, review of iTunes.
Is an extension of the battle you are having in the West. It's actually the same thing, but a different forum. Every battle has a theater of operation. And all you are seeing is one extension of that is in Syria, and the other extension of that is here in the West. And I'll explain what I mean. It's a global war against Islam. You see, the reason why I'm going into this detailed explanation of this reality, it's because the problem with Muslims sometimes is that they go into a struggle and they think they understand the terms of the battle. And when you don't understand the terms of the battle, it might take you a long time to realize what the terms are, by which time it's too late. So let me give you an example. How did the British come to India? They didn't come with a physical occupation. They came via trade. And when they came, they set up their trade, they set up their tea companies, and they bought this Nazim here, and they bought this Raj over there, and they bought this guy, and they bought that guy. And before the Ummah realized in India, it's too late. The British had bought everybody out. They had a physical occupation. They had an army. By which time the Ulama realized, they gave the fatwa against the British. Too late. Too late. They're already in your country. They've already occupied you. They've taken you over. They've taken away your intellectuals. They have won the war of ideas. They have re-transformed what that reality means in their favor. And then when you realize and you try to fight them, it's too late. And this is the problem, brothers and sisters, is that what we need to understand is that this is an overt war on Islam, but it has a very particular reality. And I'll go into that in a second. You see, this war on Islam has three manifestations. The first is physical. They come and occupy your land. The second is economic. They tie you up economically. And the third is they win the battle of ideas. Now I'll go into each of these now. You see, anybody that wants to understand the strategy of the Americans needs to read a book by Bob Woodward called Plan of Attack. He had unfettered access to the Bush war machine. And he explains, why did America go to war in Iraq? And he explains the view, the philosophy of Rumsfeld. And he says, the plan was very simple. We go into Iraq, and in 6 months, we deal with Iraq. That's the plan. 6 months. We go in, infantry, airstrike, bingo, Bob's your uncle, we're out. And after this 6 months, we go into Iran, and we deal with Iran. And then we go to Pakistan, and then we have dealt with the three strongest states within the Ummah. Why? Because they realized, brothers, 10, 15 years ago, that these rulers are on their last legs. They were saying something 15 years ago that Muslims are starting to see now. That these rulers, they're all going old. They don't really do succession very well. There's no alternative to them. They don't have a political class. There's no pluralism. There's no exchanging of views. So obviously, naturally, as these guys become old, they're going to die and they're going to leave a power vacuum. And the Americans realize that the Ummah is just starting to hate these rulers. So therefore, we need to physically occupy the land. This is why they came into Iraq. This is why they went to Afghanistan. This is not about Osama bin Laden. If you want to capture one man, you don't need to occupy a whole country. And Pakistan hasn't got anything to do with that either. This is about physical occupation. So one part of it is physical occupation. And we are seeing the manifestation of that in Syria. We're seeing the manifestation of that in Tunisia and in Egypt. This is what those, what all those realities are about. In terms of financial, in this case, it's not important to go into that now. The third one is a really important thing, which is the war of ideas. You see, you can only occupy, you can only fight for a certain period of time. Your resources only allow you to fight for a certain period of time, otherwise you go bankrupt. In order for you to stop fighting, you have to win the battle of ideas. Now people think, how do ideas battle? You know, this point is very hard to take. It's very hard to understand this point. Because people don't understand the impact of ideas. And I can see why. But let me give you an example. You see, as recently as 1972, in this country, there was no notion of personal debt. I don't know if you know that. As recently as 1972, people, you did not have the notion of personal debt. Very difficult for you to get money out of the bank. It's very difficult for you to spend more than you own. Very, very difficult. Because banks would simply not give you any money. Now this issue of transferring, giving people the ability to withdraw more money than they have, is very controversial. Very, very controversial. There was a massive debate in Parliament about this issue, actually. And then they allowed, in 72, they allowed three banks. One was called NatWest, the other was called Midland Bank. If you're too young, it's now called HSBC. And I can't remember the third one. They allowed these banks to issue the first credit card in this country. It's called Access. Again, it's been wiped out now, as far as I know anyway. But for the first time in 72, there was a battle of ideas. Then they allowed people to have personal debt. Today, you are seeing the impact of that personal debt. If you think that the budget deficit in this country is bad, you haven't even touched personal debt in this country. You wouldn't have personal debt, brothers and sisters, had it not been for that debate going on in Parliament. And you can see the whole strata of society has changed around you. And we can go into many other things, like homosexuality. In 1958, it was illegal in this country. It's only a recent thing that's legal. We can go into various things, but what I'm saying is, you can see the impact of the change of ideas. And in the Muslim world, brothers and sisters, the Muslim world, we are seeing a massive change of ideas. Do you know, as recently as Gamal Abdel Nasser's death, when he died, his right-hand man, Haykel, he wrote in his book, that when he was died, there was a procession of this man going through the streets of Cairo. People were asked, they were wailing, they were crying. And in Islam, it's not something that is recommended. So they said, praise Allah, don't cry. And some of the people's reaction was, what do you mean, praise Allah? Allah is dead today. This is what they used to think of their ruler. Gamal Abdel Nasser was the leader of all the Arabs, brothers and sisters. I don't know if you know that. He was seen as almost like a khalif. People used to glorify him. The Ummah used to look up to him. They used to love this man because of his fake war against the Israelis and other things. Look at the Ummah today, within 30 or 40 years. Do you think they like their rulers today? Do you think they have a good opinion of their rulers today, brothers and sisters? Do you think they want his communism, which he was calling for? Do you think they want that today in the Muslim world? No, this is what I mean by a battle of ideas. The Muslim Ummah has gone through a radical change in ideas. Until the 1950s and 60s, the Muslim Ummah did not want Islam. They wanted socialism, they wanted communism, they wanted all sorts of other things. It's taken this period of time for the Ummah to realize what she really wants. And we are seeing today the Shabab in Syria ready to give up their lives for Islam. This was not a reality 30 or 40 years ago. So we can see, brothers and sisters, this is what I mean by the battle of ideas. And what we are seeing today is an extension of that battle. Oh. this war of ideas waged? You see, what we see is three things happen. The first thing is, in order for you to change the ideas of Muslims, in order for you to ensure they stop calling for Khilafah and Sharia and Jihad and Ummah and all of these ideas, you have to stop them talking. And in order to stop them talking, brothers and sisters, what do? You intimidate them. You intimidate them. You put them in prison. You bang them up. So this is why you see cases like Babar Ahmed. This is the reason why you see them. They're there to make you afraid. This is why a man who looked Muslim could be shot dead in the streets of London and no recourse is taken. John Charles de Mena says his only crime was he looked Muslim. He wasn't even Muslim. SubhanAllah, he just looked Muslim and they were ready to shoot this man. So what they do, the first thing they do is they create a climate of fear so that you cannot discuss Islam anymore. So this is why in our mosques there's no discussion of jihad anymore. This is why Khilafah, you can't discuss Khilafah openly. Do you know if you criticize British foreign policy in this country, you could be jailed for that? If you openly criticize it in a certain way, you can be jailed for that. Specifically if you're Muslim. This is how the law is geared. It's geared to make you afraid. In fact, the irony of this law is that you can't actually speak out against any government. If you do, then you can be jailed, which includes actually Syria, ironically, and Libya also. So the first thing to do, brothers and sisters, they don't want to shut you up. They don't want you to talk about Islam. They don't want you to talk about certain parts of Islam. They don't want you to talk about these rules of Islam which we just went through. The next thing is, they put people up there who they're allowed to speak. And these people suddenly have an epiphany. They have an awakening. And they suddenly change their fiqh. And they start to reform Islam. Have you not seen those people who all of a sudden think that we came from monkeys and apes? All of a sudden they have this view that Islam should accept homosexuality. That Islam should accept every sort of aberration. Now ask yourself, why is it that they're doing that? See, what they want to do, brothers and sisters, they want to weaken your aqidah. Because fundamentally, the thing that drives us, when you look at Syria, when you look at these sort of cases, is if you stop people talking about Islam, and you have other people presenting a reformed version of Islam, then what you find is that the reformed version of Islam becomes the norm, it becomes normality. And maybe in your mind, and in my mind, we know that this view of Islam is wrong. But in 5 years' time, in 10 years' time, when our children grow up, and this is the only thing that they're exposed to, this is what they realize, this is what they remember, this is what they know of Islam. So the idea here is that you shut down the Muslims. You lock them down and you let people speak in a state-sponsored Islam. And the third thing you do, brothers and sisters, is you show that Islam is incapable of ruling. So, we have seen in Egypt, Ikhwan al-Muslimin has now removed Islam is the answer from his constitution. He's actively removed it from his constitution. He wants to present a democratic version of Islam. We have found group after group who have gone for power, whether in Tunisia, whether in Egypt, or in fact anywhere else in the Muslim world, actually actively present a version of Islam that is palatable with the West. In fact, the spokesman for Ikhwan says, we will even accept a ruler in Egypt even if he was Jewish and even if it was a woman. This is to what degree we are talking about when you present Islam in this way. So that you remove any discussion, any intellectual discussion about Islam. You remove the whole idea that Islam has a ruling system, that Islam has a political system, Islam has an economic system, that Islam accounts the ruler. You can remove him in this way and you can appoint him in this way. Islam has a financial system. All of these aspects are removed. And the only thing you have is democracy, but catered around Islamic ideas, Islamic words, Islamic terms. So you will see this is what's happening at the moment. So this is what I mean. What you are seeing in the West is designed to intimidate you so that you don't have a view about what's happening in the Muslim world. It's designed to intimidate you. It's designed to stop you talking so that other people can present a version of Islam which is palatable to the West. And thirdly, and most importantly, it's designed to stop us looking at the Islamic with the view of Islam on all of these things. So really, I just want to spend a few minutes to talk about what we can do here. So if we go back to this view that there's a theatre of war, and one theatre is a physical war. In this case, brothers and sisters, the only thing you can do is to support and aid. So you should give charity, and you should help them and keep them in your dua. But that is all you can do. From here, when there's a physical struggle going on in Syria, there's nothing more you can do for them from a physical point of view other than give them money, aid, and dua. That's all you can do from here. So it is imperative that we do that. We should support them, we should aid them, and we should make dua for them. This is the first thing. Two, from a point of view of the war of ideas, it's important to know where you stand. Because if you think about it, these governments are trying to change your view of Islam. They're trying to change you. So it's very important to know where you stand and where your ummah stands. So we have to ensure, brothers and sisters, that our mosques are talking about all of these issues. Da'wah, khilafah, jihad, all of the political aspects of Islam. It's very, very important. If we don't do that, then over 5 or 10 years' time, the reform version of Islam is the only Islam that people know. It's very, very important we do that. And the third thing is, the change that we are calling for is not a change in the West. The change we are calling for is a change in the Muslim world. And for us to change what's in the Muslim world, you have to join a party, a group that is working in the Muslim world, which is aiming to restore the Islamic Khilafah. There's no other solution for us, brothers and sisters. There's nothing else for us to do. There's no other work that's going to solve this problem. Khalid ibn Walid was only able to raise his sword when he had a state apparatus behind him. We know the various examples of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam when he was attacked and ridiculed. They used to write poetry about him, and he never said anything. He never said anything. He never did anything until he had a state. And when he had a state, brothers and sisters, the terms of engagement changed. The terms of engagement changed. The Prophet was dictating the terms. And he was telling them what you can say and what you can't say. What you can do and what you can't do. So until we have this state, brothers, until we work with the group that's going to bring back an Islamic state in the Muslim world, then we are going to see more of these realities. We are going to see that in the West we're going to be under siege, and in the East, in our lands, we're going to find more of these cases where a whole state apparatus can come and go against a group of people. So inshallah, I hope that gives some key points, inshallah, and we'll take some questions in Q&A, inshallah.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Podcasts on current events, Islamic guidance, Quran tafsir, and Sirah are available at islampodcasts.com as well as on iTunes. Rate, review, and comment, and let us know how we can grow in our knowledge to better serve our community. Please subscribe, share, and tell a friend about islampodcasts.com.